I am going to read all of 1 Samuel 25, and then we're going to go back and dissect this episode. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. Then David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. And there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the man of the name was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. That was as close to Hebrew as I can get. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, so David sent 10 young men. And David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus you shall greet him. Peace be to you and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm, and they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son David." When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited. And Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is David? Who is this son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men who come from I do not know where?" So David's young men turned away and came back and told him all this. And David said to his men, "Every man strap on his sword." And every man of them strapped on his sword. David also strapped on his sword. And about 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them." One of the translations actually says he screamed at them. "Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when we were in the field as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us both by day and by night, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. Now therefore know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him." Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seahs of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on donkeys. And she said to her young man, "Go on before me. Behold, I come after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. And as she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountain, behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now David had said, "Surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned to me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "On me alone, Lord, be the guilt." That phrase just boggles my mind. "Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my lord regard this worthless fellow, Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my lord whom you sent. Now then, my lord, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my lord be as Nabal. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my lord be given to the young men who follow my lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my lord a sure house, because my lord is fighting the battles of the Lord, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. When the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation himself. And when the Lord has dealt with my Lord, then remember your servant. And David said to Abigail, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there had not been left to Nabal so much as one male. Then David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, go up in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, and I have granted your petition. And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, blessed be the Lord who has avenged the insult I received at the hand of Nabal and has kept back his servant from wrongdoing. The Lord has returned the evil of Nabal on his own head. Then David sent and spoke to Abigail to take her as his wife. When the servants of David came to Abigail at Carmel, they said to her, David has sent us to you to take you to him as his wife. She rose and bowed her with her face to the ground and said, behold, your handmaiden is a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord. And Abigail hurried and rose and mounted a donkey, and her 5 young women attended her. She followed the messengers of David and became his wife. David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and both of them became his wives. Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Palti, the son of Laish, who was of Galim. There is just so much to unpack here, but I think it's important that we start by looking at some contextual things. And I'll begin by asking this question. This is for you ladies. How many of you, at some point or other, feel like you're married to Nabal? No, don't raise your hand. In previous chapters, we learned some interesting things. One person who I was reading, Stephen Davey, and I borrowed a great deal from him, but he talks about chapter 23 and 24, and actually the chapters that follow chapter 25, as cat and mouse with Saul and David. David went to one place and actually helped the inhabitants of the city of Keilah because the Philistines were raiding their threshing floors. After all the work was done, they would come and take the produce. And he went and stopped the Philistines from doing that, and then they repaid him by betraying him to Saul. And then he went to the wilderness of Ziph, and once again, they betrayed him to Saul. And there are several stories in all of these adventures that David had, but one of them is when Saul goes to a cave. It's interesting, the King James says to cover his feet, but it literally means to go to the bathroom. But afterwards in chapter 24, verse 5, it says David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed. And then in verse 12 of that chapter, after David has confronted Saul, he says, may the Lord judge between me and you. May the Lord avenge me against you, but my hand shall not be against you. So if you look back, verses 5 and 6, verse 12 of 1 Samuel chapter 24, we see that David was very careful not to touch the Lord's anointed because he was the Lord's anointed. Also, Context part two is verse 1 of chapter 25. There's not a lot given here, but it says, "Now Samuel died, and all of Israel assembled and mourned." Now I have to think that Saul probably was not there because he was estranged from Samuel. But it appears that David certainly was, and Samuel was his mentor. It's interesting, Josephus says that Samuel governed and presided over the people alone after the death of Eli 12 years, and 18 years in conjunction with Saul the king. He likewise adds, "They wept for him a very great number of days, not looking on it as a sorrow for the death of another man, but as that in which they were every one of themselves concerned. He was a righteous man and gentle in his nature, and on that account he was very dear to God." At the end of the verse, David rose and he went to the wilderness of Paran. Now, I was looking these things up on a map. Pretty interesting how David traveled around, mostly south of Jerusalem, from place to place because Saul was chasing him. And he ends up in this desert. And when we say desert, we're not thinking like the Sahara, but we're thinking where water is somewhat scarce, where there's not a lot to sustain people, but where he could very easily hide from Saul's army. In fact, we're told that Saul was chasing him with 3,000 chosen men. He chose his best warriors to go after David. And so he comes to Carmel, in a town called Maon, near Mount Carmel of Elijah's history later on. And he was rich. I was looking at those numbers, 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. It doesn't begin to compare to, for example, Job. But there are plenty of people who think that Job was the richest man in the whole world when he lived before everything was destroyed by raiders. And the man's name was Nabal. There are all kinds of translations for it, but the clearest and most concise name for him is dolt, fool. But his wife was named Abigail, which means father of joy. And she is described as discerning and beautiful. It's kind of interesting that Nabal is described as harsh, severe, churlish, cruel, grievous, hard-hearted, and then Ra'ah, the regular old word for evil. So he was badly behaved. He was a Calebite. Which is quite interesting because Caleb, his ancestor, was nothing like this. But it's also an indication that David and Nabal are both from the tribe of Judah. Because Caleb was the representative of the tribe of Judah when the 12 spies were sent into Canaan to spy out the land. And Caleb was hale and hearty into his 80s. After the 40 years had passed, he still was strong enough to lead his people, his descendants, to take over a difficult country in the land of Canaan. And so here is Nabal, his descendant, who is nothing like him at all. And so the young men come to Nabal, and they make the request that David offered to them. It was the time of sheep shearing, and that was a time of celebration, a time of feasting. As a matter of fact, David said, "We're here on a feast day," or he had the young men tell Nabal that. In Genesis chapter 38, there's the account of Judah going up to his daughter-in-law and impregnating her when he thought she was a prostitute, and it was the time of sheep shearing. So he went up to shear his own sheep and got sidetracked, shall we say. And later on, we find that Absalom, taking vengeance on Amnon, invited him to come to the time of sheep shearing when everybody was going to party and everybody was going to be joyful. Those two incidents indicate that the time of sheep shearing was at hand, and David, who, remember his first occupation? He was a shepherd. He knew something about all of this. He knows what's going on, and he invites the young men to go and ask Nabal for some food. And he tells them, why? Your shepherds have been with us. Really? And you can ask them that we didn't harm them. Nothing was stolen from them. And later on, as the young men are talking to Abigail, they say they were like a wall. And I suspect they meant not only against raiders who'd come and try to steal their sheep, but also against wild animals that try to harm the sheep. And so Nabal responds, who's this David guy? He clearly knew who he was because he said, who's this son of Jesse? But he says, there are many servants in this day who are breaking away from their masters. Now contrast that with Abigail's understanding of David and what she said about him a little bit later on. Nabal says, yeah, he's just trying to escape from his master, and his master should be going after him to kill him. In fact, he describes, should I take my meat and my water? It's all about me. This is my stuff. Should I take my bread, my water, my meat that I've killed from my shearers and give it to men who come from I do not know where? So David's young men go back and relay this news to David. And David's response was, every man strap on his sword. Now let's remember that in the cave, this had to have been a big cave. I'd like to see it one day. But David's 600 men were with him in the cave, and they said, hey, he's fallen into your hand. Go kill him right where he's doing his thing. And he said, I can't touch the Lord's anointed. Now, he has been insulted. He's been called names. He's not been given what really was due to them. I understand that even in the early 1900s, there were still Arab tribes that protected shepherds from being raided or from being harmed by animals, etc., and they would, at the appropriate time, receive from those shepherds some payment for what they had done. So it's kind of a practice that continued on from David's time up until almost the present. It might still be going on now. I don't know. But David responds by saying, strap on your sword. And here's the interesting thing. This chapter, recording David's collision with Nabal and showing us how David lost his temper and became hot and impetuous and impatient in consequence of Nabal's treatment, comes in between the narrative of his two great victories over the spirit of revenge and impatience. It gives us a very emphatic lesson how the servant of God may conquer in a great fight and yet be beaten in a small. The history of all spiritual warfare is full of such cases. And that was from the Expositor's Bible Commentary. And so what happens? We've had Nabal's response. We've had David's response, which if David carries out what he's planning to do is going to kill every male that belongs to Nabal. Now, that's not just Nabal. It's also all those young men who are working for Nabal. But Abigail hears about this from those young men who saw this all happen. And it's pretty fascinating how they tell Abigail, David's messengers sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master. He railed at them. And the word literally means he came down on them like a hawk. I watched a hawk one day. Luann and I were looking at a goldfinch in our neighbor's driveway. They're such pretty birds. And all of a sudden, a hawk goes, pow, and it was gone, leaving behind a couple of feathers and nothing else. That hawk flew off with that goldfinch. And that was how Nabal acted towards David's 10 young men. But the men were very good to us, verse 15, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when we were in the fields as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us both by night and by day, and all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. Now therefore know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him. That literally means he is such a Belial. one of the words used of Satan. It's used of Satan when he is destructive, when he tears things down instead of building them up. And imagine being the master of this group, however large it was, of all his shepherds and the people who kept his wealth for him, and they know themselves that he is a destroyer and not a builder. Then Abigail, this is so fascinating, Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seahs of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on donkeys. Where did all that food come from? 5 sheep already prepared? That's a fair amount of provisions that she just loaded up on donkeys and took to David. Now, we find later on, after her conversation with David, that Nabal was carrying out his part of a feast mainly by getting drunk. And one of the commentators mentions that he was so used to plenty that he didn't even miss what she had taken from his feast to give to David. And so she took all of this and she said, "Go before me, I'll come after you." And she did not tell her husband Nabal. So fascinating, there again, people have said she sinned because she didn't tell her husband. Stephen Davey, who again I have borrowed from so dramatically, quoted yet another pastor of days of yore, who said, "It is fascinating how many Abigails are married to Nabals." When we lived in Florida, our pastor had previously pastored another church. And he talked about a woman in his church who had to walk several miles to come to church because her husband wasn't about to drive her. This man did not want to spend money on her teeth. And so her teeth were rotten, and he wouldn't take her to the dentist because that would cost money that he didn't want to spend on her. Talk about a fool. And yet that woman, knowing everything that she did and knowing how badly she was treated, still came to church, even though she had to walk a long distance to get there. There are plenty of other cases where there are women with Abigail's heart and Abigail's discernment. And so, here's Abigail coming to David with probably more than David was expecting. I was looking at those numbers thinking, how do you divide that between 600 men? And I don't think what she provided would have lasted very long, but it certainly was enough for them to have a feast. Verse 20, she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountain, and David and his men came down toward her. And actually, looking at the geography, David was on one mountainside and Maon, the town where she was from, was on another mountainside, and they came down and they kind of met in the middle. So David's fuming all this way, and he's reiterating yet again, "I've guarded all this fellow has in the wilderness, so nothing was missing, and so I'm going to destroy him." But in 23, we find this so interesting conversation where she begins by saying, "On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please listen." Now again, I'm going to look at just a couple of things in these verses. Look at verse 28. "The Lord will certainly make my Lord," and that word Lord is capitalized, it is Yahweh, "will make my Lord Adonai a sure house," which is an expression that simply means he's going to have a dynasty, a royal dynasty. "Because my Lord Adonai is fighting the battles of the Lord Yahweh, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live." Well, I think she learned differently later on in 1 Kings chapter 15, which is long after David. We read, "David did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, did not turn aside from anything that he commended him at all the days of his life, except in the matter of Uriah the Hittite." Well, yeah, that was pretty bad. "Evil shall not be found in you so long as you live," and yet Later on, evil was found in him. But there are, according to Stephen Davey, once again, five wise appeals in Abigail's speech. Don't stoop to a lower level. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground and said, "On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow, which is son of Belial. For as his name is, so is he. His name is Dolt. His name is Folly. And Folly is with him." Verse 25. Don't take matters into your own hands. "Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand," Abigail gently and yet passionately reminds David that this action is uncharacteristic of him. After all, he could have killed Saul. And by this time, he had certainly killed a lot of people, but they were all the enemies of Israel, the Philistines. The people who were protected by David were very thankful, except in those cases of the cities that the elders of the city didn't want him around, and they betrayed him to Saul. But we'll read a little bit later on that David's popularity grew, particularly after he was crowned king of Judah in Hebron. And so she said, "This is not like you. Don't stoop to a lower level. Don't take matters into your own hands. Don't diminish your high calling." Verse 28. "Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house." There it is again. David, you're battling the Philistines. You're even now acting as a protector of the people of God. What are you doing going to kill a foolish sheep herder? Stick to fighting the battles by which the Lord is honored. Don't play the part of God. "If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling." There are two expressions there that aren't immediately clear to us in our Western culture. Life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living. Now, if you're living in a tent, or even in those days, if you're living in a city, you probably didn't have a safe in your floor. You didn't have a nice dresser in which to keep your possessions. So things that were of value that you wanted to make sure didn't get stolen in the event of a raid on your caravan, you would put into a bundle and wrap it up, and then you'd put it someplace safe where it could be in view of you, your wife, someone you trusted, take care of your valuables. And so that was called the bundle of life. This is where the stuff is that is valuable to me. I've wrapped it up. Could be jewels, could be gold, anything that was of value, I've wrapped up in a bundle. That's my bundle of life. And so David is wrapped up in God's bundle of the living. And then she also reminds him of one of those great moments when God's power showed through him. They'll be slung out like from the hollow of a sling. Now, David knew something about the sling, and he knew what it was like to sling something out of that sling. As a matter of fact, his ammunition he picked up on the way to the battle. Little rocks from a stream, five of them. And apparently he only needed one. So the things that David used as ammunition, he didn't care if he had to pick them up again, because he could always find another rock for his sling. That's the value of what God has for those who seek David's life. "The lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling." And finally, don't forget your future role. This is the finale to her amazing speech. "And when the Lord has done to my Lord," again, Yahweh and Adonai, "according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, My Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord taking vengeance himself. And when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant. David, don't sully your royal robes of tomorrow with the blood of revenge today. You're angry about today. Abigail certainly knew that. And she even acknowledged his anger, but she said, don't forget about tomorrow. Now, those are words that we need to remember, don't we? And so David responds, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion. Such a fascinating word. At its base, it has the idea of a taste or a perception based on that taste. It is translated in a number of different ways. By implication, your intelligence, your advice, as it is translated in the King James, your behavior, your decree, your discretion, your judgment, your reason, your understanding, all of those things she possessed in great measure. And she interceded for her husband, who was not a nice man. Now, I suspect that if she wanted to be a widow, she could have arranged that, especially when he was overwhelmingly drunk. But despite the unhappiness of her marriage, she dealt with what was there for her to deal with, including protecting her fool of a husband from vengeance by David. And so David says, blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. Because again, he reiterates, if God didn't restrain me from hurting you, by morning there wouldn't have been left to Nabal so much as one male. And so David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, go up in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, I have granted your petition. Nabal has no clue any of this is going on. And when she got back to her house at David's command, he was so drunk. Even Matthew Henry describes him as dead drunk. He goes on to say that he was dead drunk, and then he was dead of melancholy, and then he was dead as in dead. I didn't know that in Matthew Henry's day they used the term dead drunk, but they surely did, because he put it right there in his commentary. But Abigail does not tell Nabal anything until he's done with his hangover. And he became as a stone. There are so many different understandings of what that means that I don't know that I'm qualified to say which one I choose. Well, one person said that he actually had a physical problem in his heart, and it took 10 days to kill him. I'm inclined to think it is more his reaction to how close he came to death, because he came very close to death. However many he had, it wasn't enough to withstand 400 men. David left 200 behind, but 400 men who were accomplished in warfare, who had been in many battles, and he wouldn't have stood a chance, and they would have all been killed, but he would have been the first to go. And so he became as a stone, and about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. Now we have a really interesting part of the story. Once again, David thanks God when he hears that Nabal is dead. Blessed be the Lord who has avenged the insult I received at the hand of Nabal and has kept back his servant from wrongdoing. The Lord has returned the evil of Nabal on his own head. Abigail must have impressed David, because his very next step is to send messengers to take her as his wife. Now, remember those last two verses of this chapter. David took Ahinoam of Jezreel as a wife, and he had previously had Michal, Saul's daughter, as his wife, but she had taken her away and given her to another man. And later on in 1 Samuel, we find that, actually, I think it's in 2 Samuel in the beginning, that David insisted as part of his negotiations with Abner that his wife be returned to him. And that happened. So many questions. I don't know how long elapsed from the time of Nabal's death until David heard about it, but it probably wasn't very long. Because he knew there, for example, had been sheep shearing going on. And he knew that his men had been with Nabal's shepherds. But he hears about it, and his first response is to ask her to be his wife. Not the romantic setting you would imagine. He didn't go and get down on his knee and hold up a ring. He sent his messengers. Kind of like when Isaac got married. But at least David knew her, this at least briefly, knew something about her. He was impressed by her. And so he says, please come and be my wife. Now, that brings up just what kind of wealth did she leave behind? Nabal was a very, very wealthy man. And she gets on a donkey and takes five of her young women with her, and she goes to marry David. What kind of wealth did she leave behind? What kind of life did she move into? Let's remember, David was moving from place to place to avoid Saul. What kind of options did she actually have? And I don't know the answer to that question. Had Nabal tied up his wealth so that it would be inherited by someone other than her? In that day, it was possible. And how did she reconcile her widowhood at the hand of God and this rather immediate and sudden proposal of marriage? And perhaps most importantly, how much did she understand about David's future? And when I think about that question, I remind myself that she said, God is making you a sure house. And later on, we find out that, yeah, God did plan that. God gave a Davidic covenant so that he will always have someone on his throne. I'm pretty certain that Abigail didn't know that. But she did know what kind of man he was, and she knew that God was blessing him. I don't know if it's safe to say that Abigail had received a prophecy concerning David, or if it was true that everyone knew what had been said about David, and so she knew that he had been called to be the next king of Israel. Whichever it is, she knew something because she stated it to David in their encounter. Now we're told in verse 43 that David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and then we're told that both of them became his wives, and in fact, we'll find here briefly that later on, when they are mentioned, Abigail is always listed as the second of his wives, not the first. And then there's Michal, who David eventually recovers, but she is not much of a wife to him. Little is told us of her subsequent life. But we do know that in 1 Samuel chapter 30, David had spent some time with the Philistines, and acting like he was supporting the Philistines against Saul, when in fact, as he was going off on his raids, he was attacking Amalekites and so on. Some of those people who were allies of the Philistines. And he asked Achish, who was a ruler of the Philistines, give me a little town. I don't deserve to live in the court. Give me a little town. And so he was given the town of Ziklag, which again, looking at the map, is right on the borders of Philistine territory, and because it was given to David, eventually it was part of Judah. It never did return to the Philistines. But while he is getting ready to fight against Saul, on behalf of the Philistines, we find that the other Philistine commanders didn't want him in the battle because they said, he'll just turn on us. Isn't this the one who it was said, Saul has his thousands and David his 10,000s? When he gets the chance, he's going to turn and stab us in the back. So they said he has to go. And so he did. But he gets to Ziklag in 1 Samuel chapter 30, and it has been burned. The Amalekites had made a raid against the Negev and against Ziklag. They had overcome Ziklag, burned it with fire, taking captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great. They killed no one, but carried them off and went their way. When David and his men came to the city, they found it burned with fire and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until they had no more strength to weep. And in verse 5, we're told, David's two wives had also been taken captive, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. Abiathar the priest brings the ephod, and David inquires of the Lord. He says, "Shall we pursue them, and can we overtake them?" And the Lord says yes to both questions. You will rescue them. And so they come upon the Philistines, who even then, I'm sorry, the Amalekites, and they were still outnumbered. But they began a surprise attack, and they rescued not only all of their people, but also all of the plunder that the Amalekites had stolen, not just from Ziklag, but from other cities. So they ended up with more wealth than they started with. It was interesting to note that they killed all the Amalekites except 400 young men who escaped on camels. Well, David only had 600 men. And by the time he got to the encampment where the Amalekites were, he only had 400 himself. So they took on a numerically superior enemy and defeated them thoroughly. And then we close with this, also intriguing to me. 2 Samuel chapter 3 and 1 Chronicles chapter 3 give the account of David and David's house while David was ruling in Hebron. So the people of Judah had recognized that he was king. They crowned him king in Hebron, but he only had Judah on his side. There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew stronger and stronger while the house of Saul became weaker and weaker. But then we're told, and sons were born to David at Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon of Ahinoam of Jezreel, and his second, Chileab of Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel, and the third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. And the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital, and the sixth, Ithream of Eglah, David's wife. Six sons. We're told later on that there were a number of others who were born to him of his various wives, but by the time he leaves Hebron, he already has six wives, and they don't include Michal. He's had a son by each one of them. Now, did you look at those names? We mentioned Amnon earlier. He, because of his lust for his sister, caused great reproach on the house of David. The second one in 1 Chronicles is named Daniel. So one may be a family name and one may be a legal name. There's a lot of discussion about what it means, one Chileab slash Daniel. Chileab, like the accomplishment of the father, or like his father. There's all kinds of ways it's been translated. But in effect, it has the idea of either he was named so that no one suspected this was a son of Nabal, it really was David's son, or God is my judge, Daniel. And then his fourth, after Absalom, who you'll notice was the his mother was the daughter of a king. The fourth is Adonijah. So what happens with these? Amnon ravishes his sister, and Absalom waits 2 years until there's sheep shearing, and he makes sure that David sends his brother Amnon, his half-brother, to the sheep shearing where Absalom kills Amnon in revenge for what he did to his sister. Then Absalom, a little bit later on, rebels against his father David. Hey, my grandfather's a king, my father's a king, I think I want to be a king. And so there's a lengthy discussion of Absalom's rebellion and how he eventually was killed because his hair got caught in a tree, and Joab came and stabbed him with spears to kill him, even though David had commanded that no harm be done to the young man. Speaking dynastically, Joab was right. Speaking according to the command of God, Joab was dead wrong. And then there's Adonijah. And he doesn't become a problem until the very end of David's life. David is close to death, and he does two things. First of all, he has himself proclaimed king, even before David has died. And Nathan the prophet and Bathsheba go to David and say, "Hey, I thought Solomon was supposed to be king." And so David then commands that Solomon be named king, and Adonijah, when everybody backs off, asks for forgiveness. And then a little bit later, he asks for Abishag, who had been David's bed warmer. It says that David never knew her as a wife, but it was also a known thing in that day that if you, and Absalom did this very thing, he went into his father's concubines and slept with them, just to show that the privileges of royalty had been given to him. And Solomon, who had been named king, knew that was what Adonijah was doing. And at that point, after David's death, Adonijah is killed, executed, because he still has designs on the throne. We're told that Solomon was actually the fourth son of Bathsheba, beside the one who died immediately after birth. So of his first four sons, three became significant problems, but not his son by Abigail. As a matter of fact, nothing is said of Daniel / Kileab except that he was the second born of David's son. Once again, the speculation is maybe he died young. Others say perhaps he chose to live a quiet life away from the court, but he never, strictly speaking, he would have been second in line for the throne after Amnon was killed, but he did not seek it. And God had said that Solomon would be the one to reign. We don't know what happened to Daniel or Kileab, but we do know that his brothers did not choose the way of peace. And I wonder what Abigail thought. Let's remember, David has six wives, plus he regains Michal, plus he has concubines, and then he goes up on the rooftop and lusts after Bathsheba. And I wonder what Abigail thought, how much respect she must have lost for this man who she said would do no evil all of his days, all of his life. And I also wonder how often Abigail just sat in the background and gave David advice, because he knew she was discerning and wise. But nothing is told us of any of that, just that she was discerning and beautiful in her youth. Quite a woman. Someone who can go to the future king and say, "You need to stop now, because what you're doing is completely opposed to what God wants you to do." There is, on the YouVersion page, a devotional, I think it was 12 days, something like that, called Abigail's Heart. And I actually went through all 12 of those devotionals in the course of, maybe an hour. And the author or authoress of this devotional tried to show how Abigail met principles that are taught elsewhere in Scripture, especially in Proverbs 31. As I was reading through it and looking at what she had to say, I realized, sometimes when you're trying to find something for 12 different days, you start stretching. You start perhaps grabbing Scriptures that don't necessarily apply. And so I thought it was worth reading. I was glad I had done it. I learned some new things about Abigail I had not known before. But I also know that a lot of it was complete speculation or stretching to make Abigail fit into this paragon of virtue. And I don't think Abigail needed any help with that. She was a person anyone can emulate, and especially the Abigails who are married to Nabals. She's a great example for those poor women.
On behalf of everyone at Grace Christian Assembly, we thank you for listening to this week's Salvation by Grace message. Remember to visit us on the internet at www.salvationbygrace.org. And we invite you to join us next time when we gather around the Word and study the sovereign grace of God.